Hi, welcome to Picayune Conversations. I'm Calvin.
And I'm Lindsay. I thought we were going to do it the backwards way.
Yeah, I guess every once in a while we should do it the right way.
You can let us know if it was too dorky and we'll redo this. Yeah?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, well, today I decided to spring this on you earlier this morning about talking about behaviorally, are we pushed by our past, sort of the like Freudian way of thinking, okay. Or are we pulled by our imagined goals or futures?
Okay, yeah, what an interesting topic. I guess like in a lot of psychotherapeutic circles, there is this idea of we want to look to the past, and it's really not that we don't look to the past. We look to the past for all kinds of answers, I think, but there's this idea, I think, that's pretty pervasive in psychotherapeutic circles and certainly in the culture at large, that it's like, well, I am where I am now because these things happened. You know, I had this family and these traumatic things happened, yeah. and these good things happened. And so we're just kind of propelled forward by these things that sit behind us in the past. And that gets us to the present moment. And I don't know, it's not that I'm completely, that I want to be completely dismissive of that. I think sometimes people, certainly in our circles and the Adlerian world, every once in a while I hear a comment that's maybe a little too dismissive of the past's power to shape the present. But I do think that there is this other way of looking at things, that rather than being pushed from behind of what, you know, what's behind us, that there is this future out that we imagine, you know, that we create, that sits out, you know, in our imagination, that does pull us forward, you know, and shapes our experience of the world, shapes our behavior, even shapes our experience of the past. And that's, you know, maybe where our conversation is going to go today. But what maybe would you add or want to say in addition to that?
Yeah, I want to go back to the, like, it's not like we're saying the past doesn't influence. Like, of course it influences, just like our parenting influences. But it, where it becomes problematic is when it turns into, well, I can't now because of X, Y, or Z in the past. Like, it just, like, in this predetermination way, like, I can't help it. I can't do better or, you know, whatever. Or please forgive anything that I do because of how I was hurt in the past.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I guess, I really like the lens that you're looking at it through of one of empowerment, right? It's like, listen, if the past is, you know, the past is the past, and we don't get choice about the past. No. We don't get a choice about the things that have happened to us or the family that we came into or anything like that. And so then if it's like, if we're really just kind of in this deterministic way, you know, like, well, you had this family, these things happened to you, and so now you're this way, we don't really have any choice. But if we take a more future-oriented perspective, we have what we have, but then we have a decision about what to do with it and how we want to move in the future. And that certainly is a more empowered, more encouraged way of being. Now, you also mentioned that, the past does have some power to shape the present. I would also like to mention that, you know, how we develop this imagined future, that is something that we develop in response to events.
Especially ones that happened before. It's all about, yes, you had challenges. We all did. Some people had better challenges. Yeah. But, like, how did you manage that? What did you do with it? What did your actions look like? Because that's going to be how you make meaning of what you're supposed to strive for in order to secure that feeling of belongingness and connectedness and significance.
Yeah. Now, we're talking a lot of theory. Let's talk about what this would kind of look like. So I'm imagining, you know, somebody who comes up in a family. Okay, and let's say that this family is,
narcissistic dad.
Okay, sure. We've got a narcissistic dad.
We hear that a lot.
Right? And maybe we've got a helicopter mom. Okay? So a kind of austere, self-centered father and a pampering, potentially over-involved, even if it's coming from a good place, and a pampering, over-involved mother. Okay, well, so then it's like, the reality is that you come into the world and those are things that you have. And when we're talking about an imagined future, like an imagined goal out in the future, in essence, what we're saying is, like, people are trying to figure out in their early years, how do I make life go well and how do I keep it from going terribly, right? And so, so you've got these two very significant influences on your life helping you to figure that out, Now, maybe in some positive ways, but maybe in some negative ways. For instance, maybe there's a child who comes up in the world and they've got an over-pampering mother and a narcissistic dad. Well, maybe they look at dad and they say, you know, dad seems to have it pretty good. Like,
He gets his way.
He's always right.
Yeah.
And look how strong and independent he is. He doesn't need anybody. And, you know, stupid mom, she thinks that I'm poor and pitiful. And boy, will I show her I'm not poor and pitiful. I don't need her incessant protection. I'm going to be like dad. Or the same child or a different child in the same family could look at the situation and say, oh my gosh, dad is such an asshole. I don't want to be like dad. And look, isn't mom just, she is just a virginal angel. You know, she's everything that a person should be. And doesn't it seem, you know, that really the good life is being pampered by these good people, you know, not the assholes like dad, but the good people like mom.
Yeah.
And so, you know, okay, maybe you're 4 or 5 and you're not doing this in a very conscious way, but unconsciously what you're doing is you're projecting out in the future, this is the good life, this is what it looks like, this is how to make life go well, this is how to keep it from going terribly. And then at some point that gets kind of solidified and it's fairly, you know, it's solid, it's not going to change a ton unless we do something about it. That idea is not going to change. And then, okay, so then you become an adult and you're not living with pampering mother and narcissistic dad anymore and you're 35 years old, but you still think that the way to be is this kind of self-centered, independent person, or you are looking to your friends or to your spouse or whatever, and you're saying, pamper me, because that's the good life. That's kind of hung around, not because of what happened to you, but because of the vision that you cast out into the future.
And then what does that person do about it? Are they stuck?
Oh, yeah, say more. What do you think?
I don't know. Like, is it possible that once they're made aware, I can't remember that quote from Adler, but like once you're made aware of what you've been up to, how you handle the challenges of life, and is it pro-social or not, can you shift? Can you get that insight and decide, what are my strengths here? What am I bringing to the table and how can I use it to contribute to myself and others instead of the other way around? Or as I like to phrase it to my clients, just to rock their worlds, I'm like, are you doing this thing out of love and contribution to yourself or others, or for love?
Mm. Yeah, and let's kind of come back to the case study here. Let's take somebody who decided with, you know, with those parents, let's say that they decided at an early age that the good life is to be pampered, okay? So obviously, to some degree, that's going to be kind of nice. You know, they're probably good at getting help and they're good at finding people who are willing to throw them a bone and to cut them some slack and protect them, whatever. But then also, you know, people get tired of doing that when you're, you know, 25 years old. They'll help you out here and there, but they get worn out if you're a 25-year-old and you want to be pampered by them. So at some point, okay, maybe they come into therapy because they got no friends and they keep not because they suck, but because they've got a mistaken idea about how to approach friendship and relationships.
Incomplete knowledge.
Sure,
just
yeah.
Incomplete.
And so they come into therapy because, you know, they've had their fourth breakup because they want to be pampered by a partner. Or you know, I mean, whatever, we could imagine all the ways in which somebody might come into therapy, but they come into therapy. And let's say that we were to, one of us were to help them to see, oh yeah, early on, you got this idea that the good life is when other people are taking care of you and managing your responsibilities and watching out for you and protecting you, and they've got your back and they make your life comfortable and pleasant. Okay, yeah, it makes some sense that you would have set this goal for yourself in the future. Now, let's match that up with some realities of life, because not everybody is your mother.
Right. And the world just doesn't revolve around you.
Yeah. And people get tired of pampering other adults.
Yeah.
They may be willing to help. And I like that you know how to get help and how to solicit, you know, some care and nurturance from other people.
Yeah, how scrappy you are.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, so, again, like you're saying, there is a strength there. Mm-hmm. But then to mediate that strength with just, Adler called it the ironclad logic of social living, where it's, you know, there are other people who want to do other things than pamper you. And so can we help you come up into yourself to be a little bit more self-reliant, not independent, but interdependent, where you're not codependent.
Yeah, but you need that autonomy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly. Now, you know, I want us to kind of zoom out and imagine, when we're talking about this imagine future goal, okay, we've been talking about somebody who gets in their head, okay, the good life is to be pampered. But give us a few examples, maybe four or five. What are goals that we see people projecting out in the future?
I'd say a common one is life means be perfect or at least look like it.
Okay. Fantastic.
I can tell you what mine used to be. Life means prove that you're smart and be indispensable to others.
Okay.
In parentheses, so that nobody leaves.
Okay.
Life means be impressive.
Okay.
We get that one a lot. Life means avoid mistakes.
Yeah.
Life means you can't trust anyone.
Yeah. Now, here's I think what sticks out to me as well. You know, it's not so much that the past is irrelevant, but I think we do need to recognize that the goal that somebody sets out for themselves in the future also has a pretty profound effect on how they perceive, remember, understand the past as well. So, like, right. Let's give an example of somebody who perhaps, let's say that they were sexually assaulted, okay? And let's say that they, which is, like, trauma is a real thing. We are not by any means saying, like, oh, it doesn't really matter. If somebody, of course it matters. But then there's a question of the way in which it matters. And let's say that somebody has an idea of life means be perfect or at least look like it. Well, maybe how they're going to then perceive that trauma is, well, it was my fault. You know, particularly if we've got a little bit of a religious flavor of like purity culture, it's like, oh, well, I'm sullied. I'm sexually sullied. I don't have this like perfect sexual history or something. Those are going to kind of be the things that are going to be seen.
Oh, and also, and I can say this with certainty, that they're often not going to reach out for help because it would smear that image of looking like you have your shit together and that you're perfect. How could you let this happen?
Right, which then, of course, and we have some pretty cool research on this, you know, that shows that, okay, people experience something really, I mean, like very frightening, very demeaning, something like a sexual assault, and a huge, huge predictor of whether we're going to get what's called an acute stress disorder, which is like a more short-term thing, yeah. Or if that acute stress disorder is going to develop into a full-on PTSD, a post-traumatic stress disorder, has so much to do with the amount of support that they're surrounded with, where that is really genuine of like, who knows, and when they know, how do they respond, and do they respond in a supportive way or a disbelieving way or whatever. And so then, of course, right, it's your idea about what the good life is that even shapes your response to something like a sexual assault, how you perceive it, how you experience it, and what you do about it, that then, of course, that then kind of comes up into the present. So rather than us seeing that as being pushed along by this past trauma, we need to see that there is this element of being pulled along by this future idea that we have, what Adler called a guiding ideal, or a fictional finalism, this idea out in the future that pulls us forward. What are we missing in this conversation?
What are we missing? Courage to be imperfect here. How did we miss something? I can't think of anything.
Okay.
And maybe you guys have questions.
Yeah, it could be. Certainly we would invite you all to send us some questions if any of this is not making sense to you. I think, you know, if I was going to kind of sum up what we're saying, we're certainly not saying that the past doesn't matter. But what we do want to acknowledge is that there is this teleological, this future-oriented, this goal-oriented reality to how human beings exist and how we remember things, how we give meaning to things, and that has a lot more power over how we behave than simply the events that have preceded the present moment. And I think, you know, if there are, sometimes it can be a little bit of a daunting task,
yeah,
to think about, like, how on earth would I figure out what it is out in the future for me that is a desired goal? And what ideas might you have for people about how they could think through that?
I mean, firstly, find yourself an Adlerian therapist. I think that's a really good start. But I would say, ask the question again. I'm sorry.
How can people get a sense of, for them, what it is out in the future that they're trying to move toward in life?
Yeah. Asking themselves, when I meet a challenge, historically, what do I do? What do I do when I meet a challenge, and how do I feel about that? And then maybe even doing your little trick of like asking, what's the opposite feeling? Then you know what you're kind of striving for. That's the thing that's going to make you feel better.
Yeah.
And then putting everything kind of in a context of that.
Okay, so I'm hearing, you know, paying attention to patterned movement in life. Mm-hmm. How is it, are there patterns in how you go about responding to challenges when they come around? I think, you know, the thing for me that gets in the way as I'm thinking about this is that I have these kind of aspirational, like the right answers to things of like, well, what does life mean? Oh, you know, family and you know, certainly you layer in particular people come from a religious background. There's like, you know, well, the meaning of life is you know, to glorify God or something like that. And I'm not disputing that, but I'm also saying, I don't want to be disrespectful about that. And I think that those answers, they're very aspirational. They're prescriptive rather than descriptive. They give a sense of, you know, kind of what should be.
It's the right answer, not the true answer.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. And so that's, you know, for me, I think what gets in the way for me in thinking through this is that I have these kind of right answers like, well, this is probably what I should say, you know, or this is probably what I should want, rather than just taking, I'm borrowing some language from AA, but like taking a fearless moral inventory and saying, all right, if I just watch my behavior, what am I really doing? Am I acting as if this is the meaning of life, or am I acting as if, you know, something else is important, being the smartest, being impressive, being perfect, or at least look like it, being safe, those kinds of things.
Safe, that's the one I was missing. Yeah. Yeah, and don't forget, it's super, I think, empowering, self-empowering to know that, yes, it does matter what happened to you, but instead of focusing on what happened to you, what meaning that you can make of it, like the meaning you can change. It's so empowering. Like, you're not stuck with whatever happened to you being the prediction of your future. And that's part of what I love about this theory.
I think that's maybe a podcast that we could, an episode that we could do sometime of seeing trauma not really just as what happened, but also the meaning that we give to it, how we experience it, how we respond to it.
And how it becomes trauma.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know? Like, it's actually not the event that is the trauma. It's the meaning we make of it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's something, well, certainly let's make time to talk about that sometime.
I guess so.
Well, thank you very much for listening. We will be with you next time. Thanks so much.
Bye.